I'm Carmen Darlin. I'm the CEO of Quad City Arts here in the six-county region that straddles the river. Our guest today is from Maryland, works in Washington, D.C., and we've been talking about the river and what a joiner it is and how we all think is one large, happy family. So we're going to explore that here in a little bit. So first, I want to tell you a little bit about Experience Quad Cities. State of the Arts launch today is being organized by Experience Quad Cities, which is a collective for those of us who get together and share common interests and make common progress who have not incorporated themselves, so we'll call ourselves a collector. We came together about 5 years ago to address common interests, marketing, resource sharing, whatever it could be. There's a number of people who have hung in there for years, not knowing exactly what we could do or where we could go, but we do have a very intelligent, active advisory board. I'd like them all to stand, if they would, please, the EQC advisory board. You know who you are. Thank you. And in the true definition of collaboration, you noticed a few of the Convention and Visitors Bureau and Chamber employees who stood up for that. We are being incubated at the CVB, which we really appreciate that. The last 3 years, we have hosted, created, presented East-West Riverfest, which was a reason, an excuse, an example of how we could all work together during the month of September. And we just finished another successful showcase of what we all collectively offer. So what's the next step? That's really what we're here about today to talk about. Where do we go from here? We're sitting in this fabulous building. There's other buildings around town. There's phenomenal theater groups. There's talent. I'm sure many of you create something one way or another, whether you choose to share it or not. Where do we go from here? We knew that the arts and culture were an important part of a community, but other than just giving anecdotal, oh, I saw a big crowd here, or no one was there kind of thing, we had no way to define ourselves until now. So today we're welcoming Randy Cohen, who is the Vice President for Research and Policy for the Americans for the Arts. As it turns out, Randy knows more about us than we even know about ourselves, so I think you'll find it very interesting. He comes by his current position of VP of Research and Policy for the Americans for the Arts after several positions in the arts. And I want you to understand, he's created his own theater out in California and run a number of arts organizations. He's worked in medical research for Stanford and Scripps Clinic and Research Foundation. He's served on many boards. And so he comes today as a very knowledgeable speaker. He stands out as one of the most noted experts in the field of arts funding, research, and policy. He publishes the National Arts Index, which is an annual measurement of the health and vitality of the arts. So far, they've surveyed 200 communities, just like we've recently finished, which is why we're here today. We're going to hear what the results of those are. Randy has been involved with the Committee on the Arts and Humanities to create Coming Up Taller, the White House Report on Arts Programming for Youth at Risk, and the U.S. Department of Justice to produce the Youth Arts Project, which was the first national study to statistically document the impact of arts on at-risk youth. As you might guess, Randy's a sought-after speaker, and today he comes to talk about a project that we began about 18 months ago. We were very appreciative when our friends at the Chamber stepped up to say they would facilitate this study. And so we started. It was a 12-month study, particularly with Jackie O'Donnell's help, kept us all on task. We have 95 arts nonprofits in town that were considered to be a part of this process and this research. We have a local task force that is looking at this data, looking at what's next, what can we do, particularly from a funding standpoint. We need to look at this as a larger issue. How can we move forward? We need to look at how can we take our story into the classroom so that every student can have an arts engagement experience. And we need to look at all of our lobbies, our galleries, and our theater seats and figure out how to keep them full 100% of the time. So I want to thank the Chamber for helping us facilitate this. And I also want to thank a local funder who wants to remain anonymous. So, actually, I'll tell you a funny story. We had an event yesterday, and I had a man who said, just make my name tag anonymous. And I said, so, when I see that on all these lists of the money given by anonymous, it's really you. And he thought that sounded good. So, anyway, without further babble, I'd like to introduce Randy Cohen.
Thank you. we're getting a little bit of feedback here with this. Maybe we're okay. Yeah, turn that off, really tip that mic out there. Anyway, well, hello everybody. Thanks so much. And delighted to be here with you all. And it's a really good news story we have to talk about today. And of course, it's just great to be out of Washington, a city where nobody's too encumbered by the facts these days. Really talk about the arts in a way that, I'm going to just do a quick, actually, maybe I should use that mic.
Good. All right, watch this, how we adjust on the fly.
This is the power of an arts education, ladies and gentlemen. We're flexible, we're adaptable. All right, this sounds much better. So we've got a great news story to talk about today, and it's about the arts. We all love the arts, we're all here. The arts, they inspire us, they delight us, they engage us. Really, arts and culture, it just what creates the communities that we want to live in. But I want to stipulate that today a little bit, and I want to challenge everybody to think about the arts just a little bit differently, and that is as an industry that supports jobs, generates government revenue, and is a cornerstone of tourism. It's not intuitive, but there's some fabulous numbers to talk about. But before we do get into that, let me get situated here. And, just to really illustrate this point that, arts really are core to our communities. In fact, they have been for a long time. And I give you as evidence of that, this hand-carved flute that was found in a cave in Germany about 3 years ago. Now, it was found by some anthropologists, and they were studying, past civilizations and how people lived and everything. And what's interesting, it's a beautiful piece of work, hand-carved, and eventually somebody actually got enough guts to try and play the thing and blow some air through it, and it actually sounded good. But these anthropologists were trying to figure out, now, what was the purpose of this flute? Was it maybe to as a tool to help promote territorial expansion? Or they thought maybe it was to celebrate the hunt, or related to the fertility ritual, perhaps. I just kept thinking, maybe they liked the way it sounded, but that never showed up. But, the point is, the arts have been central to our communities for a long time. We talk about arts and jobs. Well, even back then, if you had the first musician, that spawned a job, right? How about the first music critic? Somebody had to complain about how that guy was playing the flute. So now the flute thing really stayed with us. Fast forward 35,000 years to the 1700s, where we find the shame flute. I don't know if anyone's familiar with the shame flute or not, but it was made out of cast iron, and you could see it was clasped around a person's neck, and then the fingers were shackled to this long iron tube here. And the purpose of the shame flute was to punish bad musicians. Yeah, that's right. So you got a gig at the prince's palace and you stink up the joint? Well, they march you around town for a couple of days in the shame flute so everybody can laugh at the bad musician. So a little barbaric, but hey, they cared about their music, right? So so arts and culture, part of our society for a long time. But now we're going to think about them and sort of move forward a little differently in a very pragmatic way. We're a very pragmatic nation, we like to know, what else is this doing? Okay, this is providing cultural benefits, what else? Interestingly enough, actually, even the whole pragmatism thing isn't that new. Here's something I came across once upon a time. You'll recognize this picture, George Washington, the Battle of Valley Forge, right? The big siege there, and it was a long, cold winter. He's trying to figure out, man, how do I inspire this army? They're hungry, they're freezing. You know what he did? General Washington turned to the arts. He ordered that the play Cato be performed. It's a five-act play by Addison, and it's about a young Roman nobleman who stood up to the authorities for something that he felt was right. And for him, this was really, really inspiring. So right there on the battlefield, he ordered that play be performed. And the idea was, look, don't do this. No, we're not going into battle. Don't do it because I'm telling you to. Do it because this is what we're aspiring to. This is the new republic. And he felt that the arts were the best way to tell that story. Now, interestingly, he did this despite a congressional resolution at the time that said plays were detrimental to republican virtue.
Yeah, kid you not. Can't make that stuff up, but it's absolutely true. So anyway, arts, culture, we think about them, you know, from inside of us, healthier communities, they've been that way for a long time. But now, you know, the reason we're here is to really talk about this arts and economic prosperity study. So Quad City Regions was part of a national economic impact study with about 200 communities, and you can see here we are. Everybody catch that technical effect, by the way? That was all me, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, so 1 or 200 communities, we were in all 50 states, plus DC. We studied communities as small as 1,400 people, all the way up to 4 million, to look at what the economic impact is of spending by our nonprofit arts and culture organizations and their audiences. So nonprofits, so that's, we draw a pretty tight box around that. We don't include our individual artists, galleries, or the motion picture industry, all a fundamental part of our cultural ecology, right? Just not part of this study. So let me tell you a little bit of a story, just to sort of kind of launch us into this, kind of illustrate what it is we're working at. Last month, I actually got to go to the arts. You know, you'd think with Americans for the Arts on my business card, I'm going all the time. You know, I wish. As much trouble getting out the door as the next guy. But it was date night with my wife, and we decided it was going to be a night out at the arts. Ginny was kind of leaning for a dance thing. I was thinking the theater thing. And so what do we do? Because, you know, date night starts 2 weeks before the actual day, because you got to figure out what you're going to do. So, you know, we got on the website, so we started checking to see what was performing, and we looked at all the, you know, things we'd received in the mail. And, you know, we eventually honed in on a night at the theater. So, yeah, one win for me. And, you know, pulled out the credit card, popped in the numbers, printed out our tickets, right? Love the e-commerce now that we can all do. And then, fast forward, you know, to its date night. When I got home from work, I was informed we'd be dressing up for this evening out. And in fact, this tie I was presented with. So, you know, before the evening even began, there was already some retail involved in this whole activity. So, dressed up, put on my new tie, which I'm here wearing today, and I jumped in the car, and on the way to the theater, we stopped and had dinner. Right, absolutely. Isn't that something we do a lot when we go see, you know, a great cultural event or something? We went to a nice restaurant. We spent about $60, had a lovely meal, and took our time. And then from there, it was back in the car and off to the theater. Next to the theater is the parking garage. It's a municipally owned garage. Peeled off my $10, got my little stub. I was parked, and we were ready to go. We walked into the theater. On the way in, you know, hit the facilities real quick, and then got our programs and sat down in the auditorium. It's one of those old renovated historic theaters from the 1920s. You know, big beautiful chandeliers and the frescoes, and it's gorgeous. So we just, you know, looked around and read our program and anticipated the event that was about to begin. Now, we'll just pause there for a second, because it's only 8:05, right? The play hasn't even started yet. But think about all the industries that have already been affected related to this one date night at the arts. Well, it started 2 weeks ago when we got on the websites and started looking at what was being performed that night, what was available. Arts organizations, we know this in this room, arts organizations, they have web designers, they have computer programmers. I did the e-commerce, right, and I bought our tickets using that. So you've got the finance people and the banking people. All right, so we were set there, right? So, and then date night comes, like I said, this was actually I think this may have been purchased in a museum, so it was a double bang, right? Revenue for the museum and some retail. Then when we went out to dinner, and we went to, it's one of those farm to fork places, you know, where everything's grown within 50 miles. So some of those $60 that we spent, you know, that went to the local growers and producers. And there was the waiter who waited on us, bringing home some personal income. The owner of the restaurant bringing home entrepreneurial income. So lots of activity related to that. And then it was off to the theater and that parking garage. Now, interestingly,
as mentioned, I live on the Maryland side of the area, and we don't have tumbleweed, but if we did, where this theater is now, 12 years ago, it would have been blowing through town. You know, I mean, there was just nothing happening after the business day. But they renovated the theater, and up started to pop restaurants and bars and galleries and, office space, a lot of new economy workers, architects, designers moving in there. It's red hot now. That parking garage probably used to close at 6 o'clock. Now it's open well past midnight. So they gave my 10 bucks, it's municipally owned. So the city's seen a lot more revenue related to that. And then from there, we went into the theater itself. And remember I said we hit the facilities? Doesn't matter if it's this beautiful museum or if it's our apartment. We all need a good plumber sometimes, right? It doesn't matter. So even the trades are seeing some benefit from all of this. And then we got our program. Every time you go to an arts event, you're always getting paper. There's designers, there's printers involved in that. The people who deliver these things every week. And then sitting down in the auditorium itself. Those beautiful chandeliers, I used to run a theater, I can tell you, those are not interns changing those light bulbs. It takes electricians to get up there. So 8 o'clock, the curtain goes up, the play begins. That's when most people start to think about, arts is a business, arts is an industry. Yeah, I guess those actors are getting paid, and wow, those are some crazy looking costumes, so there must have been a costume designer there or something. So that's what we set out to capture as part of this study. How spending by the arts organizations and their audiences affect the local economy. All right, everyone good with that? Good, so what do we do? Well, as you heard, we surveyed about 95 arts organizations, nonprofits here in the region, and we heard back from 69 of them. Thank you all to those of you who responded. That's over a 70% response rate, and I'll tell you, that's almost double the national average. So great response rate, it was really well-run study here. We only use data from the organizations that provided it. So I'm not, any number I'm talking about, it's not some, we got half so we doubled the number. These are real numbers we're talking about. And then to get that audience data, we surveyed 954 attendees to arts events over the course of a year throughout a whole range of arts events. I'll talk more about that. All right, so what did we find out? Now you got all the background, you know what we're looking at. What did we find out? Well, the nonprofit arts and culture industry in the Quad City regions, a $71 million industry. $71 million in economic activity in 2013. Now, $33 million of that is spending by the arts organizations themselves. And that is an important story to tell. It's a myth buster. Again, we love the arts organizations. They really create these communities that we want to live in, improve our quality of life. But the fact is, arts organizations are businesses. They employ people locally. They purchase goods and services in the community. They're members of the Chamber of Commerce. They're involved in the marketing and promotion of the region. Arts organizations are good business citizens. And that right there is a story that people need to be reminded about. Then there's an additional $38 million in spending by the arts audiences. And we'll talk more about those numbers, but that's how we get $71 million. So what's the economic impact of that? Well, we've just finished the survive the election season. Maybe we survived the election season. You talk to any legislator, what are the three big things on their mind? Jobs, jobs, and jobs. So arts are an industry that supports jobs. 1,906 full-time equivalent jobs right here in the Quad City region as a result of that $71 million in spending. Now, just some of these are at arts organizations themselves, because remember, you got the plumber there, the computer programmer, you have the people related to the the restaurant experience. So these are community-wide jobs. The entire community is seeing benefit as a result of this. Now, a little something about arts jobs that I like to remind folks about. These are very local jobs. These aren't the kind of jobs that get shipped overseas. Why? If we go to the symphony, we're not going to be happy if it's a first violinist in 99 Macintosh computers. Right? We want to see the whole orchestra up there. Our museum needs its, curators. Our arts education organizations need their teachers. These are local jobs. And the big takeaway, the arts, not just food for the soul, but putting food on the table for 1,906 households in this region. So jobs. What's another thing we look at? Government revenue. Government at the local and state levels are pulling $7.8 million in revenue as a result of this economic activity. Now, nationally, if you look at all federal, state, local government revenue as a result of the arts, it's about $22 billion. Put that against a $5 billion collective outlay, governments at all levels are seeing a pretty good return on that investment. So that's another important economic impact. So that's one of the big stories here. The arts are an industry that supports jobs and generates government revenue. Now let's drill down a little bit on this audience piece here, because, you know, this is really where the value add is. You know, it's no secret, everything has an economic impact. The dog catcher's office, the gas station. I could give you a $5 bill and my economist will follow you around and watch you spend it and measure that economic impact. But very few industries generate the kind of event-related spending that the arts do. And so what we found in our 954 audience intercept surveys is the typical attendee to an arts event spends $20.54 beyond the cost of admission. That does not include admission. Now you can look at this, and these dollars pretty much spending divides up as typical. Usually it's about half on food, and here's my neckties, souvenirs and gifts, and there's my parking at the parking garage. So you might be looking at lodging. Geez, can you still get a room for $2.74? And would you want to if you could? No, you wouldn't. Now remember, only a percentage of attendees have a small percentage have a hotel cost related to that arts event. And I'll give you a number on that. So lots of economic activity every time. And just to give you an idea, those 69 responding organizations, 1.8 million attendees in 2013. So this spending, 1.8 million attendees. Now we didn't stop there, because we asked these folks another question, which was, what's your zip code? Because we wanted to find out about this whole cultural tourism thing that we hear about, right? So, we use the four-county region here, the Quad City region. And so if you lived in the region, you were local. If you were outside the region, you were non-local. 20% of the attendees, 1 in 5 of the attendees, come from outside the region. That is a really powerful number, because this is a big footprint region. This is something that really, really impressed me. And then the question is, do those folks spend differently? Yeah, you bet they do. Look at this. Non-local attendees, just under $45 per person per event. Really double what the typical attendee spends. So that's a really powerful story. Now, we didn't even stop there. We asked those non-local attendees another question, which was quite simply, why are you here? You hear about business, you hear visiting friends and family. 78% said, oh, we came specifically for this arts event. That's another very high average. Just to give you an idea, nationally, the average, 59%. So you can start to see that the arts are a product that's drawing people to the community, and those people are spending money. Now, we actually took it one step further. We asked the people who live in the region, the locals, what if this arts event wasn't taking place? Would you have stayed home, done something else? 38% said, oh, we traveled to a different community to attend a similar kind of arts event. Now, arts spending is a discretionary expenditure. It's not like rent, you gotta pay it, or a mortgage. You can spend it here or there or not at all. And so what this study shows is that the arts are not just have a pulling power, bringing people to the community and their wallets, but it's also keeping our neighbors and their hard-won discretionary dollars right here in town. So yeah, that's why I say a lot of times, a vibrant arts community is good for local businesses. So that's a really good story right here for the region. Really, really powerful numbers. Let me jump just real quick to this other thing, because this is another way that the community helps support these arts organizations. We asked everybody about volunteerism. How many volunteers do you have? What you see, 5,809 volunteers, 166,000 hours. And you can actually put a dollar value on that, $3.7 million. Now that wasn't part of the $71 million. That's just an indicator of what it takes and how much this community is willing to invest with their feet, with their time, to help keep this going. So I think that's a really powerful powerful figure as well. When you look at the report, and the report will be on the website,
and everything in Quad City Arts, and it's available. But when you do, and you look through the numbers, and you think about, all right, I'm getting this, this is really cool. Is anyone going to believe this, you know? I mean, where are these folks from? Well, if you look to the back, you're going to see a bunch of logos. You know, so, you know, we all know America's, you know, the land of national organizations, right? You know, so there's so many national organizations in D.C., there's a national organization for the national organizations. There you go. But you know what? You can actually make that work for you sometimes, because all the mayors are part of the U.S. Conference of Mayors, and our county administrators belong to the National Association of Counties. We got the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. We got the Conference Board, you know, where the business leaders all go to. Those organizations are national partners on this study because A, they too believe the arts have a fundamental role in building a healthy community, and they buy into the methodology and they buy into the results. So you can feel really solid about these data. All right, so that's arts and economic prosperity. Everyone good on that? Everyone clear? We following? All right. So we're going to branch out a little bit, talk about this economic benefit a little more broadly, because there's a really good, powerful story to tell here. So several years ago, when we started doing the economic impact study research, because it only focused on the nonprofit organizations, we started to get folks asking, like, yeah, okay, Randy, we get it, nonprofit organizations, jobs, what about all the rest of the arts businesses in the community, in this region? So we developed Creative Industries, Business and Employment in the Arts. And this is a different study now. And it looks at the prevalence of nonprofit and for-profit businesses in our communities. So your nonprofit theaters, museums, ballet companies, but also your for-profit film, architecture, design, publishing businesses. Nationally, 750,000 of the nation's 18 million businesses are arts-centric businesses. But what's cool is I could drill down right here to a local level, and here you can see the four-county region, 712 businesses employing over 2,800 people. And you can see, and these are numbers of businesses and people on the payroll. Right, so everybody getting that? So arts businesses, each of these dots represents our business establishment related to the arts. And what you see here, which I think is great, is this is really spread out over the region, largely. You know, it's not like it's some big downtown phenomenon or something. Businesses spread across the region. Again, these are only arts-centric businesses. We don't use creative, you know, there's a lot of creative workers out there. You know, there's computer programmers and medical researchers. They're all creative, but they're not arts-centric, right? You know, so these are arts businesses. Actually, appreciate this. Year or two ago, I was presenting these data to some economists, and they asked about, well, what about morticians? Did you include morticians in the numbers? And I'm like, no, but bring it. Maybe I'm missing something here. And he said, but aren't morticians involved literally in preservation of the body and presentation, you know, using lights and makeup and cause, you know, he never looked as good, you know, as now than he did when he was alive, that type of thing. So, no morticians, you know, the preservation arts. But, so anyway, another way to look at the prevalence of arts businesses in our community. And that's really important. And so one of the things, by the way, you know, we've got this on our website, AmericansForTheArts.org. You can find all of these creative industry maps. We've also got them for your state legislative districts, for your congressional districts. And I put this one, next one up in the spirit of the election joy season. But this is called the Zombie District. This is an actual congressional district here around Chicago. That's actually a highway median. So it's, you know, a very interesting. See the gerrymandering that goes on with this. But again, you know, we've got these for all your geographic and political districts. And again, it's just one more way to talk about the arts as part of a vibrant, creative economy. And when we make decisions about the arts, again, it's not some frill, it's not some extra out there. These are businesses in our community. So let me move then to a World War II tank. Yes, you know, where's he going with this, right? This is, yes, absolutely a World War II issue, but not the tank in the conventional sense. This is actually an inflatable tank. You can see four guys here holding that up.
That is a product of the 23rd Special Troops Unit in World War II. We're going to start talking about the importance of creativity here and how our arts community helps drive that. So World War II, European theater, the military was trying to figure out, boy, we need any edge that we can get, right now. And so they thought, what if we came up with a way to confound the enemy, to throw them off, to make them think we're bigger here or smaller there, or there's something going on over in that space. And so they developed the 23rd Special Troops Unit, nicknamed the Ghost Army. And so who do you go to? They went to the colleges of art. They brought in artists, designers, writers, performers, and they staged 10 hugely elaborate battlefield diversions. They did phony radio transmissions. And in fact, one of the U.S. generals during the Rhine War credits the 23rd with saving 10,000 American lives because it peeled off this huge portion of the German army who went to chase down the inflatable tanks. And my point is, look, if you can use art to be creative in a World War II battlefield, you can certainly do it right here in the region here, right? So, creativity has become hugely important to our business community. So, as evidence of that, this is the conference board. This is the national organization for business leaders in this country. And they give you the leading index of economic indicators, consumer confidence index. It's who business leaders go to for information. Their research shows that creativity has soared to the top 5 applied skills that business leaders are looking for. In fact, it's actually leapfrogged the 3 R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic. Well, we talk about that as researchers, look, of course you gotta be able to read, write, and do math. But if you can't take some creativity and apply it to your scientific, engineering, your medical knowledge, you know what? Those rules-based jobs, those are headed overseas. But if you can take that knowledge, that training, and be creative and come up with a new idea or a new product or a new market, that's how to prosper in a global economy. Their research shows 72% of business leaders say creativity is of high importance in hiring. 85% of those folks say we can't find the people we're looking for. Now, one of the challenges is, how do you know if you got a creative on the line? You cast the net, but there's no typing test for creativity. So they asked them, well, how do you know? How do you assess creativity? The 2 biggest indicators of creativity were starting your own company, so entrepreneurial activity, and study of the arts, especially while in college. And so now the conversation with these folks is, yeah, tell me about your MBA, tell me about your involvement in the arts. Again, one more way that folks are engaging and connecting here. Now, you work your way down the list. 27% of the respondents actually indicated we assess creativity based on the candidate's appearance during the interview. Whew, thank God for an anonymous survey, right? Because I would have never had the guts to check that box. But just want you to know, I'm wearing my cool socks today. So if anybody's thinking, that they're looking for a new chief innovation officer, I could be your guy. Anyway, I'm always ready for the next stage. So creativity is important. Now, this relates to the whole creative economy and how workers in the new economy are operating very differently than when a lot of us started. Me? Boy, when I got out of college, I'd fly to whoever'd have me. I didn't fly, I'm sure I took a bus. I couldn't afford to fly. But workers in the new economy are operating very differently. They're picking the communities that they want to live in, moving there, and then figuring they'll find work. This is a domestic phenomenon, it's an international phenomenon, and what they're looking for, the research shows, always up towards the top of that list, creative, culturally vibrant communities. They want to live in a cool place, right? Who doesn't? There's so much going on here. You got the urban, living starting to boom here. And so lots of opportunity here. And it's not just big cities, it's mid-sized cities. So this is one of these other benefits that we get from a creative, culturally vibrant community. It's drawing this new economy workforce. And if that's where the workers are, this is where the businesses go. Because these days, what do you need? You need an electrical outlet and room for the satellite dish. You're pretty much good to go. You can go to Iowa, you can go to Ireland. You're gonna go where you can find the best workforce to make your business prosper. So again, another economic benefit that comes from this creative cultural product of our community. So this report, the conclusion of this report, again, it's business scholars writing for business leaders. It's clear that the arts, music, drawing, dance, they're up there, provide skills sought by employers of the third millennium. So really powerful findings there, I think, that are worth mentioning. So what does this look like actually in practice? So last year, the Nobel Prize winner, Thomas Sudow, for medicine, after he got his thing, you know, the first thing they all say is like, oh, I think you got the wrong number. This can't be me you're talking to. But they asked him, who was your biggest and most influential teacher? His bassoon teacher. You know, isn't that something? And he said, because that's where I learned pattern recognition, the iterative process, doing it and doing it again, pattern recognition. And in fact, there's research, there's a scholar up in Michigan who studied all of the Nobel laureates in the sciences, going back to the very beginning. And what he found is that those scientists are 17 times more likely to be actively involved in the arts than the typical scientist. 17 times. And that's, you know, that's just not like passively going and attending. That's making music, that's writing, that's acting, that's creating. And it wasn't, and the typical scientist, by the way, was it like, you know, Randy with a Coke bottle and a thing of Mentos or something like that. You know, it was scientific societies in the US and in the UK. So a really interesting kind of correlation there, right? About how engagement in the arts helps drive our innovation in our society. So let me wrap up here and we can start to get into some discussion and Q&A. What you're looking at here is a picture from the Louvre, just about a little over 100 years ago. In 1912, the Mona Lisa got pinched. Somebody stole the Mona Lisa. It took them 2 years to get it back. But you know what? In the 2 years that the Mona Lisa was gone, more people went to see where it had been hanging. Yeah, you know where this is going, right? More people went to see where it had been hanging than saw the actual painting in the previous 14 years. We've got a job to do. We got to make sure we tell our story. We got to use these numbers. We got to help people understand that when we support the arts, we're getting both cultural and economic benefits. You know, we all love the golden eggs. You got to remember, we got to keep feeding the goose, right? So the arts and its vitality takes our support and our investment from our community. You know, and again, a vibrant arts community, it supports jobs, it generates government revenue, it drives economic development, it doesn't hinder it. So I want to thank you all. I want to thank you all for everything you do for the arts. Everything you do for the arts is important, and you're important for doing it. Thank you very much.